Welcome to month one Investable ETR briefing. And the briefing we're presenting today covers the trading period from the 1st of January 2021 to the 31st. So last month, in other words. As the briefing document explains, exchange traded receivables are leases, monetary obligations, or bills issued under contracts for assets and goods and services supplied to investment quality companies or credit insured invoices from investment graded insurers. So what this means is that an ETR is evidence of a debt owing from one company to another. Typically, these tend to be large companies or banks that are household names, and they owe money to their smaller micro to medium sized suppliers. We call these micro to medium sized suppliers businesses, we call them originators, because they originate the debt obligation transactions that create the ETR that are traded on the exchange. So the ETR is evidence of the large company's liability to pay the smaller one, and credit exchange by these ETR at a nominal discount to their face value. In doing that, when the ETR are settled or paid in full, the difference between the face value that is settled and the discounted price that it was purchased at creates a margin. And it's that margin that creates the yield or return for your investors. So credit exchange also provide other credit facilities to support other types of transactions, such as trade finance, asset finance, and others. Essentially, they all work on the same principle that the traded ETR is a business transaction. The exchange provides liquidity and is paid a commission for doing so, much in the same way a bank charges interest. As the briefing states, at the end of January, Credit Exchange held active RSA of 18.38 million. RSA, as you know, stands for Revolving Sale Agreement. And a revolving sale agreement is a document or a contract between the micro to medium-sized business, or the originator, and credit exchange. The revolving sale agreement is a commitment by the originator to sell a certain value of ETR to the exchange in any given period, typically 1 year. So let's say, for example, an originator needs a revolving credit facility of $250,000 in order to run their business. They'll come to credit exchange, much like they would go to a bank, and apply for that credit facility. So if we agree to offer them the $250,000 on a revolving basis every 60 days, they must agree to sell us that $250,000 worth of ETR every 60 days, and the revolving sale agreement, or RSA, will therefore be for $1.5 million worth of ETR over a 12-month period. So this commitment to sell $1.5 million of ETR annually to the exchange is what is documented in the RSA. As stated, at the end of this January, Credit Exchange held 18.38 million of these active RSA contracts. During 2020, we saw an overall decline in active RSA contracts, and I discussed trading patterns, speed of settlement, etc., and the shortening of the cash-to-cash life cycle, as we call it. All occurred because of our increased use of things like letters of credit in our business. This is mostly attributable to our move further into trade finance, and indeed early indicators from shipping are that we've interpreted these markets correctly. However, I neglected to point out there's also a significant increase in leasable assets in the 12 months to December 2020. At the end of December 2019, we held leasable assets of about 1.7 million after depreciation. By December 2020, the leasable assets were three times that value and were in excess of 5.2 million after depreciation. So if you remove depreciation for a moment, that means our leasable assets went from 2.5 million in 2019 to circa 7.5 million in 12 months. We'll look at that number again later in the briefing, but suffice to say, We will amend the briefing format in quarter two to more accurately reflect the total use of the investors' funds, not only in investable trade finance type transactions, but also in the leasable asset finance as well. Last month, the audit was well advanced and indeed is now finished. So I'll go through, as I suggested, I'll go through some of the results of that in a moment. This briefing is about January's trades, I'd have to say they've been disappointing. Already at two board meetings we've held this year, the words slow and sleepy start to the year have been mentioned twice. That's not to say we've lost our market direction. On the contrary, the deal pipeline has never been as high. But there's a real issue with originator confidence. New year optimism was all but gone by mid-January, and we're hearing real concern from even the most robust corners of the market. We've been blessed with a mild winter, and weather has not dampened local trade in Ireland. The UK did suffer briefly, but recovered quickly. What we're not recovering from, because it hasn't really been fully exposed yet, is Brexit. You take a walk into Marks and Spencer in Dublin, and you'll see the shelves are half empty. Probably for the first time ever, it seems they've been forced to rapidly source local produce simply because the UK supply lines are completely backed up. This and other factors are contributing, I think, to the slow, sleepy start, as we call it. When you compare January 2020 to January 2021, the results aren't good. But regardless of this poor opening, we remain confident of our 2021 target to increase annual trade yet again from last year's 160 million to this year's target of 225 million. We report weekly, and for us, this is week nine. Albeit most other calendars ignore that January 1st was a Friday and regard this week as week eight. However you choose to look at it, today ends 8 weeks of trading, and the first four to January 31st may have been low and slow, but I've said our deal pipe's never been stronger. So we expect by the end of quarter one, we'll have stepped on the accelerator and pushed on to our year-end goal. No one can predict the future. So is 2021 going to disappoint? I'd say no. But we must be realistic about the market we work in. So let's watch quarter one results and report back next month. Hopefully 2021 will not be a repeat of 2019 with a retraction of business before a boom in 2022. Time will tell. Anyway. Remaining positive and to help us prepare for this year's planned and projected continued growth. As you may recall, we restructured part of the business internally, changed reporting lines and the systems to support them. So some of the reasoning of this was to allow me to return to what I'm good at, and that's bringing in the business. It's much easier to lead a team when you're actually part of it. When your numbers are treated the same as everyone else's on the team. So in addition to that, we put a lot of time and effort into tightening up our organization processes. By that, I mean the processes we use to find new originators and get them traded. Using this much improved method that we now call the Dealmaker system, we built in an early warning detection mechanism, if you want to call it, to identify weak deals and close them down swiftly. To us, or to me, and certainly killing off weak deals is almost as important as closing new deals. So using the Dealmaker system during the month of January alone, we trimmed out as many time-wasting distractions as we could. And that's allowed us to focus on the real deals with the real potential. Just even putting a name on this process gives it a life of its own. And to enforce that, we've renamed the business desk, and we now call it the deal desk. So it'll be interesting to watch this system develop and also how it's performing against the sizable targets that we've set for 2021. The newly named Deal Desk is what drives the business, looks for the originators, and obviously gets them traded. So throughout 2020, we worked to improve efficiency and expand our reach internationally. So the new speed of communication using video conferencing is really a godsend, I suppose, to what we do. It's leveraged in many other aspects of our business too. So if you take recruitment, for example, using Microsoft Teams in the last 48 hours, we interviewed 11 people, shortlisted five, and selected two. So on Wednesday, one of our candidates was in Sweden, and yesterday, a potential candidate, an Irishman living in Colombia, was making a presentation to all of us, where we were in Dublin, Belfast, and Birmingham. So these candidates all gave the members of the Deal Desk their video presentations in the past 48 hours. And as I said, we were able to select two candidates. So early next week, we have a couple of selection tests to go through and then a final interview stage. So I would hope both of those people can join us on the Deal Desk mid-March. Less than 12 months ago, that speed of recruitment would be regarded as unrealistic or even unwise. That same speed and convenience that we used just in the example I've given you, it's the same sort of speed and convenience that have been able to help us focus on our international trade. So as markets might shrink locally, as they have in Ireland and the UK, the Deal Desk must compensate that by expanding into other markets and other sectors. Returning back to the briefing, it then goes on to say that there was 27.02 million fully allocated, and this is a decrease on the December figure of 32.38 million. What this fully allocated figure means is that on the 31st of January, the exchange held ETR valued at 27.02 million. This means there were 27.2 million euro of investors' funds in the market on the last day of January. And if you add that number to the RSA revolving sale agreement of 18.38, that represents future orders on our books. That adds up to a total of 45 million, which is 5 million or 10% drop down on the stronger position the exchange held in December when it was 50 million. Moving on to the next figure, it states that investors redeemed 0.15 million of their funds in January. That value of withdrawals is typical with that time of year, January, if not slightly lower even than the same figure from January 2020. On the other side of investor behavior, the incoming deposits, as Noel alluded to a moment ago, were positive. In fact, they were 3 to 1. So that meaning for every euro that left the exchange, three were coming in. As is typical, these investors were a mixture of private companies using ETR as a safe haven for their cash, and an even split of pension funds in the form of ARF, PRB, and PRSAs, mixed with private investors' savings. As you can see, the investor inflows continued to outgrow the withdrawals, and were consistent with the prior year's trends. So the economic and social crisis remains good for Investable, with continued liquidity and stable in our market as the year begins. And this brings the focus of the briefing to the ETR average duration figure of 90 days. As you may know, this number is what we call the credit index, and this is an ETR average duration or number of days it takes for an ETR to get settled. The number appears to have stabilized at the moment and is exactly the same value that we saw last month. Last month, I mean December. Still more than 25% above the exchange's average of 75 days, and it's resisting return to that anytime soon, it seems. But looking at our slow, sleepy start to the year, I fear this is likely to increase in the coming weeks, maybe not in our market, but in the indigenous market as a whole. We're waiting here with bated breath on the arrival of our new credit machine trading system. And there's been some excitement earlier this month where we passed what I'd call the point of failure. By this, I mean up until that point, where we could independently verify the system's capabilities were sound and good, there was always the risk that the IT system, IT team may not deliver the system. Given that it's taken the group here two failed projects over a four-year period to get to this point, we're keen now to get this into production as soon as possible. Given its power and capabilities, it'll be exciting to see it in action using real-time data. Anyway, we'll report more on that in next month's briefing, but there's still another 6 months of low-level development before it's completely replacing our current systems. Anyway, sorry, I've kind of wandered off topic there. Sorry for that. Clearly, I'm very excited by what I've seen of the credit machine so far. Anyway, going back to the credit index, this is the ETR average duration or number of days it takes for an ETR to get settled, as I said. So it's the cash-to-cash cycle from the day the ETR is issued and purchased in cash, obviously, and the number of days it takes for the debt to be extinguished or settled and the cash returned. So the credit index hit an all-time high of 134 days in June last year. That would have been a serious concern for any originator. So an almost 30% drop back to 96 days in December. And the fact it seems steady at the moment, this means the originators had the same level of revolving credit facility requirements in January of 2021 as they did in January 2020. So credit index is an economic indicator. And for the better part of last year, I talked about the fact that we were in a global depression. In January, I promised not to continue licking that wound throughout this year. So I'm going to remain true to my word on that in this briefing, certainly. And keeping to my promise from last month, I said I'd go through our accounts for audit 2020. So let me just put them up on the screen here for a second and press this button here so you can see it. Right. So these are our audited accounts. So let me begin by explaining that we have a saying around here that past performance is a good indicator of future performance. So when we're evaluating an originator, whether it's when they're going through the deal maker system process of the credit team or the credit team evaluating process, we look hard at how they behaved last time we met them, or how their performance in 2019 compared to that of 2020. So I think it's fair to say that looking at Credit Exchange, which is the accounts I have on the screen in front of me here, if we looked at that in the same way, it would be fair. So we identified the need for change as far back in 2017 when we initiated our first credit machine project. 2019's numbers showed an overall decline in income and profit. But as you'll see, in the absence of our new trading system, we still managed to significantly improve our numbers across the board in 2020. So these accounts are prepared to FRS 102, the financial reporting standard applicable in the UK and the Republic of Ireland. And under that company law, the directors must not approve the financial statements unless they're satisfied that they give a true and fair view of the assets, the liabilities, and the financial position of the company. So the principal activity and business review starts the document, as you can see here, and basically it explains to the reader what we do and how we serve both the investor and the originator sides of our business. This section also points to the structure of the group, with Credit Holdings owning Credit Exchange and also Trade Credit, which only began trading in 2021. Moving first to the income statement, which is down here. Excuse me for this. There's the signatures of the directors, signatures of the auditors, and here we are on, yes, the income statement. So here you'll see an almost 60% increase on the income for 2020 versus 2019. There's a marked increase in general expenses, and the most significant factor here is people. We had hired several key people during 2020, and although they increased our cost base, as you can see, they delivered to our top line and our bottom line also. In quarter four, the board took to the reorganization of the company I mentioned earlier, and as you'll see in the notes, as you'll see in the notes down on page 21, let me just jump down to that. We actually reduced the headcount by three people. This has further reduced in January of this year, but as you've heard, we are currently recruiting new personnel as I speak. If I go then to the balance sheet, you'll see the significant increase in the leasable assets that I talked about earlier. So we went from just under 1.7 million to 5.2. Both of these are after depreciation. And strong and all as these numbers are, as you can see, we were still overstocked with cash and cash equivalents, being this number here, more so than we were at the end of 2019. But for intermediaries and investors, the most important part of this figure of almost 27 million is the loss absorbing cash that is explained in note 9-11. So if I go down there just for a moment, looking at these figures, you will note that there is a discretionary reserve of 5.7 million and a further 89,000 in loss and default control cash. Loss and default cash. But there was also subsequent events in post-year end where a further 6 million of cash was moved back from the Quist Close investors account to its correct location in the LDC account. So when you add the discretionary reserves of 5.7 million plus the LDC reserves of 6.1 million, that means that there was a total of 11.8 million of loss absorbing cash in these accounts as at the 31st of December 2020. As you can see, there's links throughout this document, but from the point of view of you speaking with investors who are asking you about safety of their funds, how they're protected, what security is in place, your answer is basically right here. This is the total amount of cash in the organization, but key to that is the 5.7 of discretionary reserves and the further, call that 100,000 plus the 6 million down here, you add those together. That's what we are using as the first lost variable in these accounts to protect your investors' funds. Okay, so returning back to the actual briefing itself, let me just turn that off for a moment. Yeah, returning back to the briefing itself. Where are we? We've got the trading result then for January of 4.4 million. And as I said, this is a poor result when compared to the same period in 2020. We do have a lot of work to do to get moving here, but we're confident in our systems, our approach, and indeed our market. So let's see if I can prove that confidence over the coming months. Below last month's trading figure of 4.4 million, you will see that in the same period, treasury performance was well over 8 million at 8.38 million. This means that we spent roughly 4.5 million and collected almost 8.5. This is a repeat of December's overbalance of inflow when trade purchases were below that of trade settlements. And that was repeated in January too. However, as I explained last month, you can see the ebb and flow month on month where high value of trade sees lower treasury collections. And obviously the reverse is also true for December and or January's figures. Trade desk and treasury continue to monitor this trade balance of funds in versus funds out to ensure it remains stable and within the control parameters set down by the credit risk policy. And that governs the overall risk and general exchange trading policies. The inflow outflow of trade and cash during January and or December of the prior month had obviously higher collections, but this is also affected by, again, the credit index of 96 days and overall its effect on the treasury's performance and collections. Moving to the center of the document, this is where the list of the 10 largest investable ETR holdings and the top 10 rated holdings are shown. The two lists show what companies or organizations owed the exchange the largest amounts of money as at the 31st of January. And as you can see, the HSE and Huawei continue to hold their slots for the beginning of 2021, just as they held for the 10 months of last year. As with December, we see the repeated appearance of Atradius and Vodafone. And this month, Cork City County Council does not accompany Musgraves in January, but LG Sky Chefs made another reappearance, not only in our top 10 largest holdings, but also on the right side, top 10 rated investable ETR. Moving to that right side, these are the highest rated debtors, and if none of these were investment grade or have an investment grade rating on the 31st of January, this list shows a random selection of organizations, regardless of the amount of their liability, and is simply a selection of the most creditworthy. As has been the case since the better part of last year, for the most of last year, I should say, the pie chart below these two sets of lists continues to demonstrate a significant change in what is typically a well-diversified spread of ETR across the market. The HSE here in Ireland and NHS in England, along with others in the health and community sectors, is well off their April high of 25% last year, but are nonetheless up on December's number, moving from 12.7% by 2 percentage points to 15.7%. Since quarter two of last year, this pie chart has a repeated heavy exposure to the wholesale retail market. And as per prior briefings, this is more wholesale and food retail. Dunn Stores, Musgraves, other companies like that make regular appearances on the top 10 largest looking debtors on the exchange and continue to perform well, as does other sections like construction, manufacturing, businesses and services. The pie chart does still continue to use the EU NACE categorization system, and the adoption of the credit classification is a component part of the new credit machine software, which I will talk about a little bit more detail at next month's briefing. Returning to the actual performance of the exchange in January 2020 versus 21, you can see that trading values were down more than 60%. Volumes were down too by 30% and are an overall poor start to 2021. with this month pretty much following suit. So I've labored that point already on this call, so let's move on from that. Investor redemptions were slightly lower than the same period last year, and as I mentioned earlier, are 3-to-1 money in versus money out. We've discussed the credit index of 96, and this is a strong indicator of how credit control and payment cycles are performing in Ireland and the UK at any moment. And at 96 days, the market is off this base by more than 25%, but it's at exactly the same level as it was in December. This section finishes with the note that we had over 6,200 creditors or debtors and creditors. And to finish our performance in December, the largest single trade was just under spot 2-3 million. As explained in the investable brochure and all other briefings, the average value of an ETR is circa €2,000. But we have traded ETR where the value has been less than a euro. And as you can see here, last month, the largest one was valued at 230,000. Moving on then to the trend section of January's briefing, we can see that the investor's yield or buy price during this January averaged 1.842% and is the second such, albeit slight, increase on last month. As seen in our accounts for 2020, where we were overstocked in cash, and as explained earlier, the issues with new origination remain unchanged again in January, and it's consistent with last year. So as the briefing states, when you compare this to the negative 1% yield on bank deposits, the investors are still getting a yield that's 2.75% better with exchange traded receivables, which are on-demand cash equivalent, compared to what they would get on the bank. So to discuss the trend in a little more detail, the graph on the right side shows the movement during the month. We started at 1.832, and as the day passed, it gradually increased and ended at 1.858. So to finish this briefing, you will see a repeat of the active RSA or revolving sale agreement of 18.34 million. And basically, looking outside my window, there's a lot of sunshine, or there certainly was a moment ago. And this makes for the end of the winter with a positive outlook, hopefully. So spring is with us next week. And with it, let's all look forward to a sunny recovery from the darkest of winters in several versions of that term. So that is the end of the briefing. Thank you all for attending.